This audio is brought to you by MuslimCentral.com.
We're good to go. For the brothers who want to pray, I just want, because we're going to start this one, so that's really going to bother you. So if you could move way to the front, then that'll be easier for you, inshallah. Yeah. Yeah, jazakumullah khair. We're good to go, right? Okay, طيب. بسم الله والحمد لله والصلاة والسلام على رسول الله وعلى آله وصحبه وسلم اللهم علمنا ما ينفعنا وانفعنا بما علمتنا وزدنا علما رب العالمين اللهم عنا على ذكرك وشكرك وحسن عبادتك. So today's session, inshallah, is a continuation of last week's session, part two, to the explanation of hadith 31, marriage and love, where the Messenger عليه الصلاة والسلام said, لم يرى للمتحابين مثل النكاح. There is nothing like marriage for two who love each other. That is, if two are in love with each other, the Prophet صلى الله عليه وسلم said, there is nothing like marriage for both of them. That this is the medicine, that this is the natural and logical and emotional and satisfactory end to such a love. Everything else will fail and will bring misery. So we started talking about that, this hadith, and what it includes, and topics around it, right, related to it. And we'll continue, inshallah, to talk about these today, because this is one of the most important aspects of love that we encounter, but we are ill-equipped to deal with. And that is because we don't understand what love is, not really in a full sense, and we don't understand how all of that relates to the love of Allah Azza wa Jal. So last time I told you that perhaps the first thing we will talk about today is that there is a difference between love before marriage and love after marriage. And whatever you want to call that, you want to call it attraction, you want to call it love, you want to call it love with quotes, the person feels attracted to so-and-so. They want to be with so-and-so. They worry about so-and-so if something happens to them. So there is this emotion that they share. But what you feel before marriage is not what you're going to feel after marriage. And the reason being, wallahu a'lam, is before marriage, how much do you know about the person to really love them? Right? Especially if you follow the Islamic guidelines, right? And it is something, an affection that is happening from afar, from a distance. How much do you know about them to really love them? A lot of time when we are falling in love with somebody, even if you're talking to them on the phone all the time, or you see them all the time, but you're not living with them, you're loving an idea. You're loving an ideal, and you're loving a fantasy. So there are two things that are coming together. The little that you know about that person and your projection, your ideas, your fantasies, your wishes. So you marry the both, or marry both together, and you produce a fantasy of who that person is, and you fall in love with that thing. That's not reality. On your part, that's not reality, because you don't know the person yet. And you're projecting the ideal that you have, which we'll talk about, an ideal that you either had inherited from movies and novels, or you constructed on your own. You hope that person to be, so that becomes your ideal. So you're falling in love with that ideal. And you expect that person to be that ideal. Of course, after marriage, it's going to be different. So that's on your part, that's what you're loving at that moment. On the part of the other person, there's always that element of pretense, presenting the best that you have and the best that you are. It's a mask that all of us put when we meet other people. And that is a natural approach to meeting people. Like when you come to the masjid, do you behave as the worst person you are? Do you behave as you are naturally, or do you put on the best appearance and best behavior? The best. It has to be the best. And there's nothing wrong with it because this is how you want to be and this is how you want people to see you. Plus, you tolerate other people in the masjid or at work or what have you because you're not that close to them. You're not going to spend a lot of time with them. They don't irritate you as much. And you want to maintain an image. At home, you can't do this. You can't keep pretending. You can't keep holding back what you want to say, who you really are. So if you are attracted to someone and they're attracted to you and you're talking to them and they're talking to you, those minutes or those hours that you're talking to each other or you're out with each other, and I'm not saying this is Islamic, but while that is happening, you're presenting the best of you and he's presenting the best of him, right? You're not really revealing, and it's not sinister, no, but you're not really revealing the worst of you until you actually are married. And when you marry, all of these pretenses fall because you don't have to pretend anymore. This is the person who is at home with you all the time, who supposedly you'll spend the rest of your life with. So there is no reason to pretend anymore. So when you're upset, you'll show them that you're upset. When you are frustrated, when you're sad, they'll see all of that. You're no longer what? Masking who you are. So if that person is presenting the best of them, you're presenting the best of you, and the in-between, the missing parts that you don't know about them, you're filling them in with your own fantasies and ideals, then that love after marriage becomes a constructed fantasy. When you marry, reality will show itself. You will be your own self. He or she will be their own self. There is no pretense anymore. And now you will live under pressure, which is the pressure of normal life. Right? So some days are good and some days are bad. Sometimes you fight. Sometimes you clash because you're always next to each other. Now you'll see how he or how she will deal with frustration, sadness, anger. Then you'll discover who that person is. Then, and only then. So there is no amount of time that you can spend before marriage that will reveal to you who that person is. No amount. Even if you're engaged for a year or two, it's very different. And there is a consultant, right, and he's speaking from practice and from people coming and talking to him about their experience. And he's saying, and this is a female who has married the one that she loves, and she's saying that, I knew him for a long time, 1, 2, 3 years. We were constantly talking, constantly on the phone. We go out, he pays for the meals, etc., etc. Again, I'm not saying that this is Islamic, I'm just narrating what she said. So I knew him enough to think and believe that I know who that person is, long enough to believe that I know who that person is. She said, the day we got married, I discovered that he was very different. He changed. His behavior changed. Before, he would pay for everything. Now he doesn't pay for anything. Before, he would do this and that. Now he doesn't want to do anything. Now he settled into what he perceives to be his role and her role. His reality, his nature now reveals itself. Again, I'm not saying that this is sinister. I'm not saying that somebody is playing you. I'm just simply saying that this is how a person is before marriage and this is how a person is after marriage. So, love before marriage is not a predicting factor or a good predictor of your happiness after marriage. You could fall in love with someone, marry based on that love, lack compatibility, you just have those emotions, lack compatibility. After a few months or a few years as a married couple, you lose that love. And then people divorce. So as love can come, love can go. So it's not the only thing that sustains a marriage. And somebody may say, okay, well, why not I live with someone, like actually live with someone, have sexual relations with them, sleep with them for 1, 2, 3 years, boyfriend, girlfriend, only then will I know if we are compatible, right? It's like a test drive. Like you test drive a car, only then would you know if you like it or not. I'll test drive a human being. And the answer to this is what? Is that if you pursue this, don't imagine that Allah Azza wa Jalla is going to bless your union. Because what are you doing? As we said last time, if the shaitan is the third, the shaitan will bleed the barakah out of your marriage, or union, or your companion, or that love that you have. So if you really love someone, and you want to live with them, guaranteed you're going to lose that love. Or will be tainted and contaminated. Or if you try to marry that person after some time, it's not going to be successful. So that's not the way, right? To preserve love and to preserve marriage. But rather, as we said, to follow what pleases Allah Azza wa Jal and follow the sunnah of Muhammad alayhi salatu wassalam. And we want to say really that, again addressing that issue before and after marriage, that love actually grows stronger after marriage. Because when you marry someone and you are committed to them and you stay with them, you are facing life together. You have common experiences. Your hopes, your expectations converge. They become one. You lean on her, she leans on you. So in addition to the attraction that you have, physical and emotional, you have other elements that strengthen that love and bring you closer together. So as the years pass, the love grows, it doesn't diminish. It may be expressed differently, right? It will definitely not be expressed in ways that you see in Hollywood and Bollywood. So that's how we develop ideas about romance. How a husband's supposed to act, how a wife is supposed to act. So when you go into a marriage, before marriage, or at the cusp of marriage, expecting your life to look like a Hollywood movie or a Bollywood movie, you're going to be severely disappointed. Because what they present to you, what does Hollywood present to you? Reality? And I'm including Bollywood here because a lot of people watch Bollywood, right? So what are they presenting to you? Reality? This is how people actually live? So you think about it. Are these actors living that life? No. Then the writers, right? Are they living that life? The director? Anyone who's involved in that movie, is he living that type of life? No. So what are they writing? What are they producing? It's a fantasy. Why are they producing a fantasy? Because it sells. So they know that everybody is looking for love. This whole book is about that. Everybody is seeking love. So he says, if I can sell them that product where this person is finally finds love, conquers everything to be loved and to find love, dies for the sake of his or her beloved, it will sell. People are going to come and they're going to watch it and they'll keep watching it. And if it sells, I'm going to do more and more of it. Until I find out that it doesn't sell anymore, I'll switch to something else. So love in Hollywood and Bollywood is not supposed to resemble reality. It's not supposed to heal. It's not supposed to guide. It's not supposed to satisfy. But basically, what it does is confuse and damage. And there are people, and it's not only Hollywood and Bollywood, there are also some Muslim countries, and we're coming to Ramadan, right? And when you come to Ramadan, Muslim countries, they produce the best series. You know about this, right? The best series, the best TV is found in Ramadan, right? So people are going to be watching more TV in Ramadan than before or after. And one main focus, and I'm saying I'm not kept up with whatever they're producing, but very popular series are about love. And there are people who are actually divorce their husbands or divorce their wives because their life doesn't match what they see on the screen. Look how gentle he is. Look how caring he is. He brings her flowers and chocolate and this and this. And look how compassionate she is. And you consider that, you consider your life, you find that there's a lot missing from your life. Say, I'm going to look for somebody else. So families break up because the reality does not match that fantasy. And you must understand that it's just simply nothing else but a fantasy. And if you understand that, you're not going to learn from it how you're supposed to be a husband or how you're supposed to be a wife. But rather, you consult, you ask, and you go to the Quran, you go to the Sunnah, and you also moderate your expectations based on what you can give as well. So, something interesting about marriage, and this is something that we need to explain, is that not all marriages are based on love, and not all marriages are sustained by love or get sustained by love, right? Meaning in the beginning there might be some love, but it's not the thing that sustains them or keeps them together. And this is a saying from Umar ibn al-Khattab radiallahu anhu on page 330. He said, رَحِمَ رَضِيَ اللَّهُ عَنْهُ أَقَلُّ الْبُيُوتِ الَّذِي يُبْنَى عَلَى الْحُبِّ وَلَكِنَّ النَّاسَ يَتَعَاشَرُونَ بِالْإِسْلَامِ وَالْإِحْسَانِ. He says, the fewest of all homes are built on love, but people live together with Islam and kindness, meaning they build a home and they sustain a home with Islam and kindness. So what he's saying here, radiallahu anhu, is something important. He's saying, how many homes are built on love? And by love, he means what? That intense attraction that husband and wife have for each other. That romantic love that we all know. How many homes are built on that? They married because of it or continue to stay because of it? He's saying reality is, that's not the thing that keeps people together. Because as I said, this thing can come, but it can go, it can subside, it declines. And it has to decline with time, that type of emotion, that type of sentiment, it has to decline with time. But something else takes its place. So he's saying what? يَتَعَاشَرُونَ, they live together, they continue to sustain each other, they continue to build that home with Islam and with Ihsan, with kindness to each other. Meaning I've received kindness from them and I give them kindness. So there is that respect and that love because of that kindness. And they also maintain that home because of Islam. You know, I owe them something and they owe me something, and they're also taking care of the kids and the family and what have you. But if you're only going to sustain a home or a relationship based on love and nothing else but love, even if you lack compatibility, you got to understand that that may not sustain that relationship. It may end up killing it, right? And we will talk about that intense love. But love can make relationships and people miserable. Love, that intense love, it can bring misery to people. If there is nothing else to guard against that intense fluctuations or intense extremes of that love. So you have a story in the Quran of the wife of Al-Aziz that loved whom? Yusuf alayhi salam. And it's mentioned in the Quran. قالوا امرأة العزيز تراود فتاها عن نفسه قد شغفها حبا. So the people, right, in the city, they're gossiping and talking about the wife of Al-Aziz, and they say that the wife of Al-Aziz is trying to seduce her servant. She truly loves him, meaning her love, his love has penetrated her heart. قد شغفها, meaning it went inside, شغاف القلب, meaning as if the heart, if it has a thin layer around it. And so his heart penetrated that layer. I mean, it's way deep inside. So she loves him. What did she do with him? She accused him, tried to frame him, and eventually was the cause behind his imprisonment. Right? Because when she was caught and her husband found her, she said, what is the punishment for someone who wants ill for your family? So what do you expect that the husband will do to someone who wants to harm his family? He could kill him. She had to save herself, right? Although she loves him, she was willing to do that, and eventually he spent years in prison because of that. So don't think that simply because one loves another, right, that is going to end in a, you know, in a happily ever marriage. No, he could kill her or she could kill him. She could turn against him and he can turn against her. Love needs other things as well. So Umar ibn al-Khattab radiallahu anhu, he said, if you're going to wait till you love someone to get married, or you will only stay with them if you still continue to have that feeling, a lot of people will get divorced. But what else is there? He's saying there is Islam and there is Ihsan. Kindness, right, to other people. Mercy. That both of you have common goals. Both of you are taking care of each other. Both of you are protecting each other. Companionship. right? Companionship. So there are reasons why people do things, just not just love, right? So how many people, and I don't know if really this is a good example or not. Maybe it's not. But how many people love their jobs? Okay, I'm not equating marriage to a job, but I just want to kind of convey a message. How many people love their jobs? Few. How many people go to their jobs? Everybody. So why do you go to your job? Is it because you love it? Because it serves other purposes as well, right? There are other things that you love, and because of that, you stay in this thing. Otherwise, you wouldn't. So I'm not saying that marriage is a trap like you're trapped with your job. I'm not saying that. But I'm saying that, no, marriage is blissful, but you don't just stay there simply because I'm madly in love with so-and-so. I can't wait to see her or see him because I'm constantly, daily, a romantic person. You can't do this. No one can do that, right? So if you are realistic about it, your marriage will be successful by the will of Allah Azza wa Jalla, right? Now, there is something here that I address, which is a love that turns into a disease. Right? Love that turns into a disease. So anything, too much of anything, right? If you eat too much, it becomes an illness, right? Although food nourishes you, but too much of it is damaging. If love becomes excessive, too intense, without restraint, it becomes an illness. And that is what is called in Islam, ishq. Okay, and other languages, right, borrowed this phrase or this word from Islam, and they use it, right? Ishq, which is intense love, very intense love. And it kind of can equate with the idea of a soulmate. And everybody is aware of our idea of the soulmate. So what is a soulmate? Soulmate is the one and only that you have to find. And if you don't find, you're always lacking and you're always searching. But once you find them, you're completely satisfied, right? So your soul has a mate and you're not complete. You're always incomplete until you find your soulmate. And your soulmate is not just any random person, right? There has to be one. So you keep looking and looking and looking until you find this person. And that idea resonates, I want to say, with all of us because its basis, meaning we're looking for something, we're looking for love, is sound. That's true. But you're not looking for a human being. You're looking for whom? You're looking for Allah Azza wa Jal. Okay? But then because you don't know, you think that you're supposed to look for a human being who is going to satisfy this big gap in your heart. So this person that you're going to find, that soulmate, will be everything for you. Everything. Right? That you're going to be miserable, but once you find them, they'll be the person who will take care of you, the person who will save you, the person who will listen to you, the person who will solve your problems, the person who will empower you, the person who will take you and propel you into unimaginable heights. And the problem with this, of course, it's absolutely unrealistic. No one single person can be that for you. Do you believe that? Right? No one single person can do that to you. Because if you think about it, could you be that person to somebody else? That they can come and give you all of their problems, all of their insecurities, all of the gaps that they have, and you say, you fulfill all of this. Fulfill all of my expectations. Be everything that I want to be, the perfection that I want to be. Can they? No. So that's not only unrealistic, it's misguided, because what you're looking for is Allah. You're looking for perfection. And that gap will always be there, even when you find a human being. Because when you find that human being and you say, that's it, when I find him, when I find her, he'll be everything to me. But then you discover that they are imperfect. Sometimes they don't want to talk to you. They're angry. Sometimes they're busy with their own problems. Sometimes they have no solutions. Sometimes they're the cause of your problems. Now what? That wasn't the soulmate. You want to look for somebody else? Go. You look, you find somebody else. They might be better, but still flawed. You want to look for somebody else? Go. And every human being that you find, you'll discover that they are flawed. and so on, and so on, and so on. Who is perfect? Because you're looking for perfection. Who is perfect? Allah Azza wa Jal, right? But some of us don't realize this, right? So we think and we still believe that humans can satisfy that and they can be our soulmates. And that is this the idea of ishq, where you love someone with all of your heart, a human being with all of your heart, and that love dominates to the degree that it eclipses all other types of love. And it becomes sickening because you can't be with them. There's a distance. So it makes you sick, spiritually sick, and in fact, physically sick, and it can kill a human being. Can kill, right? They can't eat, they can't drink, unless they are next to so-and-so, because the only thing they want from life is to be next to them, nothing else. And that type of love is an illness. And that is what they call it, ishq, or ishq al-suwar, the love of beautiful imagery, or beautiful images, or beautiful faces and physiques. You look at someone, beautiful face, beautiful this, beautiful that, you fall in love with that image. And you give it all. And you become trapped by it. And Ibn al-Qayyim, he said, هذا مرض من أمراض القلوب. This is a disease. This is on page 331 to 332. He says, this is a disease of the diseases of the heart. And before I begin, this is a greater disease, I contend, a greater disease today than it was in the past. Because how many women or how many men could you see in front of you in the past? You're restricted. Huh? Restricted to few women here, few men over there, and that's it. And you may fall in love with them and may not. But how many could you see today? Not just around you, but through the media, pictures and videos or whatever, how many could you see? People who are not in the same geographical area, living on other continents, are paraded and selected, right? And groomed with makeup, stylists, Photoshop, this and that, until they don't resemble a real human being. They don't look like themselves anymore. But they become as close, or they become as close as you can to human perfection. No flaws. So when you see that, it's easy for you to fall in love with that image, that actress, that actor, that famous person, who in reality, if you were to be next to them, you would not like them. You would not be attracted to them. But now through those, all of those filters, they are the image of perfection. So you love, fall in love with them. And you only want to be with them. And you only want people who are like them. And when you want to get married, you say, I want a person who looks like her. Or a man that looks like him. And that again is what? Fake. But anyway, he says, that type of dominating love, he says, is a disease. And he said, he continues. And he says, that ishq of those images is only the affliction of hearts that are empty of the love of Allah Azza wa Jal, the ones that have turned away from Him, and the ones that have found a replacement for the love of the Divine. But he says, if the heart is filled with Allah's love and longing to see Him, that will repel the ishq of images. And that's why Allah Azza wa Jal said about Yusuf alayhi salam, كَذَلِكَ لِنَصْرِفَ عَنْهُ السُّوءَ وَالْفَحْشَاءَ إِنَّهُ مِنْ عِبَادِنَا الْمُخْلَصِينَ. So we did so that we would protect him from evil and indecency. He is of our sincere servants. So he says that indicates that sincerity is a cause to repel ishq and all the consequences that come from it, which is what? Evil and indecency. So he said, some of the Salaf have said, العشق حركة قلب فارغ يعني فارغا مما سوى معشوقه. He says, عشق, loving someone to that degree, to that intensity, is a movement, or the movement of an empty heart. Meaning it's empty of anything else but loving that person. And it also means that it's empty of loving Allah Azza wa Jal. So because it was empty of loving Allah, it's vacant. So when it saw this thing, It loved it, and it loved it with such intensity that it was the thing that it loves the most. So he's saying that if it loved Allah the most, it's impossible for it to fall victim to that type of excessive love. Does that make sense to you? It's impossible, because the love is already occupied, right? If you're already full, you ate your meal already, you're not going to desire another thing. It's full, you're full, I'm done. But if you're hungry, you're going to eat anything. You'll consume anything, good or bad. So if the heart is empty, okay, the heart cannot remain empty. It has to have something. So if it doesn't have Allah's love, I have to put something else inside. So what do I love? Anyone or anything. And it becomes the dominant love. And the problem with this, of course, is that the greater you love someone, the greater that you surrender to them, until you reach a point when you become their slave, internally and externally. So he said here, Ibn al-Qayyim rahimahullah, he said, and it's important to remember this, فَالْإِنسَانُ عَبْدُ مَحْبُوبِهِ كَائِنًا مَنْ كَانَ. He says the human is a slave to whom they love, no matter who they are. Right? So when you love someone, and let's say it's just natural love, you will surrender to them. In part. He says, can you give me this? Can you buy me that? Can you take care of this? He'll say, fine. They say, why? Why did you accept that request? Because you love them. Right? You accept that request because you love them. The greater the love, the greater the surrender. Right? The greater the love, the greater the surrender. Till you reach a point where if they asked you for anything, you will do it. And you will not risk upsetting them, even if you upset Allah Azza wa Jal. When you reach that level, when the love that matters the most is loving them, than the love of Allah Azza wa Jal, obeying them or listening to them or fulfilling their desire but not Allah Azza wa Jal, then you ask yourself, am I a servant of Allah or their servant? Right? Am I a servant of Allah or their servant? Because no matter how much you love them, okay, there has to be a ceiling, there has to be a limit, there has to be a point where you say, oh, not this. I love Allah more. Because every human being, right, will have that tendency to ask for more and more. And unless they put a limit on themselves, somebody else has to put that limit, because otherwise they'll take advantage. So you will always surrender to the people that you love. It's just you have to ask yourself, do I have a limit or not? Otherwise, they will make you their servant. And if they are, if they like ethics, if they like manners, if they like sympathy, and they know that you love them to that extent, they'll abuse you. And they'll abuse that love, and they'll take advantage of you. And that's the problem with that type of intense love, which is you don't think, you can't think anymore, you're not rational, and people can take advantage of you even though they don't like you or they are not in love with you. So a person who loves Allah Azza wa Jal is free. Is free to say this love is harmful, he could stay away from. This love is excessive, I will restrain it. I will accept these requests, but I'll reject these requests. No. So the point here is that, as we said, the heart is always looking for the eternal, which is Allah Azza wa Jalla, and no human being can take its place. And every torment, every love is a tormenting love without Allah Azza wa Jalla. Everything that you love. So we said, you're a slave to whomever you love, right? And we say also that every love and everything that you love will torment you with that love, except the love of Allah Azza wa Jalla. Except the love of Allah. Why will it torment you? Not intentionally, because some people will torment you intentionally. But why is every love tormenting? Because you could lose it. And that's tormenting, right? You could lose it. So if they become sick, that's tormenting. The idea that they could stop loving you, that's tormenting. The idea that they could hurt you, that's tormenting. So any love has that element to it. But of course, if you love Allah at the same time, He protects you from that element. But the love of Allah Azza wa Jal is never tormenting, because you can never lose Him. He'll never turn His back on you. He'll never betray you. He'll never love you less, unless you love Him less. It has to come from you. But He'll never love you less. He'll always love you more than you love Him. So the love of Allah Azza wa Jal is that love that you're looking for, that once you find, you'll be secure. But not love of humanity. So Ibn al-Qayyim again, and I'll just translate it, he says it's impossible for the heart to have love, the love of Allah Azza wa Jal, whom he called the highest beloved, al-mahbubu al-a'la. So you love, and then reach a point, Allah is the highest of all beloveds. So he said impossible that you will have the love of the highest beloveds and having ishq for images. They are opposites. They cannot come together. Because loving Allah Azza wa Jal will dismiss or expel any type of false love. And if you love something other than Allah Azza wa Jal, you love it because it leads you to Allah. It's a path to Him. It sustains that love or protects you from harmful elements that block Allah's love. Basically, he's saying what? When you love Allah Azza wa Jal, everything else that you love could melt into the love of Allah Azza wa Jal. So you love your wife not just because she's the wife, but also what? She sustains you, right? She protects you. She leads you to Allah Azza wa Jal. So she also becomes part of loving Allah. And that intensifies that love, sustains it, protects it. You love your children, why? Not only because you had them and Allah gave them to you, but because you are building something with them that pleases Allah Azza wa Jal. So if everything that you love becomes part of loving Allah, it gets protected that way, and you increase that love and you strengthen it. And it doesn't compete with Allah's love, it becomes part of it. Now, there I've included on page 335 to 336, steps or recommendations that if someone is suffering from ishq, that excessive intense love, right? What can they do to be able to overcome it? And they're basically kind of divided into two parts. One is just increasing your love for Allah Azza wa Jal, and the second is steps for weakening ishq. Let me go through them a little bit, right? Inshallah, with some brevity. So, increasing your love for Allah Azza wa Jal. So get to know Allah Azza wa Jal better and worship Him more. Read the Quran more and contemplate what it means. Make a lot of dua. Make a lot of dua. Because the more dua that you make and plead with Allah Azza wa Jal, you say, Ya Allah, I've been afflicted with this and I know it's damaging. Protect me from it. And rescue me from A, B, and C. So make a lot of dua. And when something is addictive, something had possessed the heart, don't expect that it's just going to leave you in a day or two. It will take some time. So be persistent in that dua, and Allah Azza wa Jal, but this is addiction. It's a type of addiction. So anyone who has a habit that is bad, an addiction that is bad, be engaged in dua daily, and Allah Azza wa Jal will heal that addiction. It may take some time, but Allah will take that addiction away. But it's important to be persistent and to be sincere. Remind yourself that the only love that you need is the love of Allah Azza wa Jal, and that's the thing that truly can make you happy. Read about the biographies of other Muslims and how they devoted their lives to Allah Azza wa Jal and how much they have sacrificed, so that you see that life is not simply about loving so and so, but are things that are much bigger and more satisfying. And keep the company of pious Muslims who will remind you that there are more important things than simply loving so and so or being shunned by so and so. Steps for weakening ishq. If you love someone, marry them. If you're in love with someone, marry them, right? If they are a good potential spouse, right? And if not, start thinking about marrying somebody else. So if you're in love and you've been burned and you're still feeling all of that, and what should I do? Should I keep longing for so-and-so? He said, no, look for somebody else. Because she will have or he will have what that person had and more. So that would be your own new concern, the new love that you're going to have. So don't stay trapped in the past. So either marry the object of your love if they are a potential good spouse, or if not, marry somebody else. Also, distance yourself from the object of your love if they are not suitable for you. You love them, but they're not good for you. Don't stay around them. Don't keep looking at them. Don't keep checking their social media. Don't read their previous emails. Delete all of that, because you need distance. And with enough distance, you'll start thinking less and less about them. Does that make sense? So you need distance, right? Keep yourself busy with useful work, lower your gaze, and do not look at the haram, because that weakens you. Even other types of haram, that weakens you. So in order for your heart to be strong enough, it needs to stay away from sin, so you need to fill it with iman, not with haram. Ask Allah Azza wa Jal to assist you. Stop listening to music and stop watching movies, because that will weaken you as well. Music is about what? Even if there are no lyrics to it, music inflames the desire. So if you're already suffering, don't listen to sad music about loved ones who have left you. And that doesn't work. That defeats the whole healing process. Stop listening to it. And don't watch movies about lovers and romance. And that doesn't help. So you have to stop this and you have to stop that. And then you can start healing, right? Ponder the fact that each human being is flawed and will decay and die. So kind of bring that ideal image that you have of so-and-so to real life. They will age. That beautiful skin will not continue to be beautiful. That radiance will not continue to radiate, right? They will decay, they will die, they'll turn into sand and ashes. That's the eventuality of every human being. So if you think about them in that way, think about their flaws. You can't see them, but think about their flaws as human beings. Ask about their flaws as human beings, and you will love them less, right? And also remember that no matter whom you love and how intense your love is, you're going to leave them, or they will leave you with death. They'll have to die. What will you do? So assume that they've died already. What will you do? Okay? So you have to decrease your attachment on a human being who's going to leave you and attach to Allah Azza wa Jal. And there's a hadith here on page 337, which is going to be actually the last hadith in the series, hadith 42. Which I'll just translate it, but the explanation, inshallah, will come later. He says, Rasulullah sallallahu alayhi wa sallam, he said, Jibreel came to me and he said, Ya Muhammad, O Muhammad, live as long as you wish, you're going to die. And love whomever you want to love, you're going to leave them. And do whatever you wish to do, you will find it on the Day of Judgment. You'll be requited by that. And know that the believer's dignity is his night prayer. And his honor is in not needing people. We'll discuss this hadith, inshallah, later. But the relevant part is what did Jibreel tell Muhammad alayhi salatu wasalam? From him to him, to us. Love whomever you want, you're going to leave him. So if you have people around you that you love, and you do, and now you see them through that filter of you're going to leave them, your attachment to them, your reliance on them must decrease. Just with that. Because there's going to come a day when I'm not going to have them around. Then what? Will that devastate me? Can I move forward? Can I? That decreases your attachment on any human being. The last part of the book, that chapter, is about forbidden attraction. And that is an attraction to someone that you cannot marry. Right? So somebody is attracted to a member of the opposite sex, but he cannot marry her, she cannot marry him, for whatever reason. Right? So if we say somebody is attracted to a married woman, right, is in love with a married woman, do we tell him, go and pursue your love and break up that family? Because love is all that matters? No, right? We tell him what? We tell him she's married, off limits. Doesn't matter what you feel. Love doesn't justify any action. So again and again and again, I'm saying love is not an absolute good. Meaning, as long as you love X, be with them. That's okay. That's wrong, right? So love is not an absolute good. Love needs directions, guidance from Allah Azza wa Jal. Then it becomes good or bad. So love can be bad. So loving that woman and pursuing her and trying to have her divorce her husband to marry her is an absolute evil. So that's not love that Allah Azza wa Jal loves. But he hates it. So that's if you're attracted to someone from the opposite sex. If you're attracted to someone from the same sex, that's also forbidden attraction, right? Because can you marry them? No, Islamically. And so that attraction, or even if you say, I'm in love with so-and-so, woman with another woman, man with another man. They say, well, just go ahead and be with them just because you love them. We say, no. Just like with the first case that I presented to you, this would be haram to pursue. But I love them, but it doesn't matter. Allah Azza wa Jal now is testing you with that love and attraction. Right? Can we not be attracted to things that are sinful? Alcohol? Or have addiction to alcohol? Drugs and have addiction to them? Does that mean that we're supposed to just drink and consume these things? No, we stay away from them and we say, that's your and my test. So if you have an attraction to somebody from the same sex, what should you do? Know that it's wrong. Stop. And all the things that we talked about, the treatment of ishq, apply here. Strengthen your iman. Distance yourself from them. You know how you lower your gaze when you see somebody from the opposite sex? If you're attracted to someone from the same sex, right, you lower your gaze. And it doesn't make you a thing. And that, Islamically, it doesn't make you a homosexual. It doesn't make you gay when you're attracted to someone from the same sex. It just happens that I'm attracted to so-and-so. It can. It can happen. But it doesn't define you. Oh, now I'm this, but not that. It doesn't define you. It just simply means, Allah tested me with this. Stay away from it. Allah hates it. Stay away from her. Allah hates it. And that is test. And sometimes love empowers, and sometimes love is our test. And so when the love of Allah Azza wa Jal is superior, you can say no to these things. And know that Allah will compensate you in the next life. Just like a lot of people today, they cannot get married. They cannot. I don't have the money. I don't have the means. Right? I didn't find the right person. They cannot get married. And what do they say to themselves? When I meet Allah Azza wa Jal in the next life, Allah compensates me. There will be marriage. There will be love then in Jannah. So this is not the whole story. So you could just stay away from it until Allah Azza wa Jal allows it. If He allows it in the dunya, in halal ways, alhamdulillah. If not, that's not the end of your story. You don't have to lament and regret and say, woe to me, and everybody got it, and I didn't get. There is an afterlife where you're going to get everything that you want from Allah Azza wa Jal, right? So, this is it, wallahu a'lam. And let me know if you have questions. And I have one question that I was asked. So let me answer that, and also giving you, inshallah, the chance to ask or think about more questions. So the one question is related to what we said last week. It says, if I want to choose a spouse and want to determine religious compatibility, so we have common understanding, and when it comes to religious practice, it's mostly okay, mostly good, 70%, 80% good. But there is this last 25 to 20% that it's still not okay in terms of how he, she dresses, how he, she behaves, some habits, some focus in life, whatever it is. So most of it is good, but not all of it. How do you address this? Do I have to look for a complete, perfect match? Or if there is something missing, it's okay. And if it's okay, what are the parameters for it to be okay? How do I deal with it? So ideally, of course, you want a 100% match whenever that is possible. We see eye to eye, everything is fine, alhamdulillah. So in terms of character, in terms of religious practice, you have no reservations, and she has no reservations. But suppose that there are some missing elements, right? And you want him or you want her to adjust, to change, sooner or later. You bring this up, right? You bring this up as you are conversing, as you are talking, as you are deciding. Well, I expect from my husband not to do these things. I want from my husband to do these things. That's the kind of husband that I want to have. I expect from my wife not to dress this way, not to behave this way. So this is what I want from you. And the other says, this is what I want from you. And to see then the response. Yani, for instance, this sister is perfect in every way, but she doesn't wear the hijab. It came to this, right? You say, well, I expect or I want from my wife, she has to wear the hijab. Would you be willing to? And if you find not only enthusiasm for it, but acceptance of that, and she does wear the hijab and changes, or he does the same thing, changes, then that is, bi'idhnillah azza wa jal, increased compatibility between you, and you can advance, you could proceed. If you find reluctance, right? If you find resistance, and this is something that is a must, and not doing it is haram, or doing it is haram, sometimes it's a major sin, you cannot proceed until this is resolved. Because convincing someone to change and having them agree to that change before marriage is easier than after marriage. Before marriage, right, it's easier. Because the person is eager to enter into that union, and they're eager to also what? I mean, they may be more willing to change because it's a new life. But once you marry, and there is this pressure on both of you, daily pressure, and you begin to get on each other's nerves, right? Irritate each other a little bit. And you have to as human beings, right? So you're going to stop listening to her a little bit. And she's going to stop listening to you a little bit. Because, oh, you're annoying. And she's annoying. And he's annoying, right? So you're not going to listen to each other as well as before marriage. So if you tell her after marriage, well, you promised you're going to wear the hijab. When will this happen? He says, stop nagging me. I'll do it whenever. Right? She's not going to be as willing, as accommodating. But if you say all of this before, and you have a commitment, and you have a change in practice, then yes. But should I marry her, even though she's not wearing the hijab? No. Should I marry him, even though he smokes pot? No. One day he will stop? No. Do I marry him, even though he goes out with his friends and smokes shisha and what have you? No. He has to let go of all of these things. All these bad habits, he has to say no to them, and he has to commit to that. And then it depends on your religious observance. Because you may be at a level of religious observance and commitment that you're not going to even consider someone who has that in public. You're not. A sister who does not yet wear the hijab, she says, no, it's too much work for me. I'm at this level, I need somebody to match. For other people, it's fine. As long as she has that commitment and she starts, it's fine. So people are at different level of religious practice and observance. And as long as that person is maintaining the minimum of the halal and haram, no major sins, no visible major sins, then you say fine. So uncovering or not wearing the hijab is what? A major sin or a minor sin? It's a major sin. Right? You know? So if you're engaged in a major sin, no, that's a red flag. You cannot proceed. So when you cleanse that, when you take care of it, then you can proceed. And again, you match your religious observance so that both of you are supportive of each other. Right? Wallahu alam. So I'm going to check, inshallah, to see if there are any online questions, but think about questions you may have. Yeah, go ahead. So is every love tormenting? Does that apply to loving objects and things? Definitely. Because if you love something too much and you worry about it so much, you'll be afraid that you're going to lose it. It'll be damaged. And when it's actually lost and is damaged, it leaves you with sorrow. Right? So that's what it is. So it is tormenting too. So the less that you love things, especially things more than people, the less you're attached to things, the better you are. Because you could lose them, and if they go, they go. Allah could replace them. Right? Yeah. So people could love money so much that, you know, if they lose it, it kills them. Like literally kills them, right? So it's tormenting in that way. So how to know whether a person is compatible with you for marriage? How to get to know someone you're seeking for marriage for character? Since some people may put up a persona. Definitely, they could put up a persona, and the reason that they do this, as we explained, some of it is natural, some of it, they could be trying to, they're fake their way into a relationship or a marriage. But how do you know? You talk to them and you ask questions and you inquire about them, about their friends, about their habits, and you, if you do this, you're most likely to find out whether they are compatible or not. So it's not just simply what he says about himself. Okay, so if you say that you are religious, what does that mean? And if you remember last time, we kind of broke that down into what it means to be religious. So what does it mean that you are religious? And again, it depends on your level. So religious, what, do you go to the masjid? Yeah, what masjid? Right? Masjid X. Or who knows you there? So you ask the imam, you ask the people around, do you know so-and-so? Male or female, do you know so-and-so? Okay. You say that you are religious. Do you pray? Do you fast? Do you do? Okay, who are your friends? A, B, and C. So you investigate A, B, and C. You investigate them on social media. You investigate this person on social media. You'll understand their connections and their priorities. You ask about the family. They must have a reputation. He must have a reputation of some sort. Nobody is a hermit, right? Concealed, so fully concealed. No one knows them, even if they try to lie. Okay, so now you have a little better idea. Okay, religious. Do you attend lectures? Do you listen to scholars? Do you read Islamic books? Yes, what and who? So they list. And you can tell who's honest and who's faking it. Who really knows, because one, two, three questions deep enough, you'll know whether a person is listening or not, what they know and what they don't know, how knowledgeable they are and not, how observant they are and whatnot. You'll know. One, two, three questions. If you are young, if you are a bit naive, if you don't know yet, kind of bring in somebody who knows, right? A parent, an elder, right? Somebody else, or at least that they provide you with the questions. Ask about A, B, C, and D. So if you inquire, if you investigate, bi-idhnillah azza wa jal, you'll know who they are, and they're not going to stay hidden from you. And by the way, also, istikhara. So we all know what istikhara is. You pray istikhara, and it's, I want to say, even though it's recommended, I want to say it's almost a must when you are proceeding to choose someone that you don't fully know 100%. Just like getting a job, just like accepting an offer, flying somewhere, and you don't know, is this good for me or not? You investigate, but there's always that element, a hidden element, that you don't fully know. A 10%, a 20%, a 30%, Allah knows. But it's just hidden from you, right? So just like last week, somebody asked me, he says, like, how do I know that she is who she says she is? Like, how do I know, even if she tells me? He says, well, how are you going to know? Unless, you know, you hire a private investigator who follows her all the time, or you install a camera that is monitoring her all the time, how will you know? You have to accept what she says. She could be lying, yes, but you investigate, and that uncovers that lie. And the istikhara is there also to protect you. So to think that everybody is lying, or to think everybody is hiding something, that's excessive, right? So investigate and ask Allah Azza wa Jalla, and Allah will not disappoint you. Allah will not disappoint you. If you want, if what you want is the halal and you're seeking it, Allah Azza wa Jalla will not disappoint you. So how do you prepare yourself for marriage? What are some green flags to look out for while getting to know someone for marriage? So how to get yourself ready for marriage? If you know the responsibilities and rights of a husband and of a wife, how you're supposed to act, how the Prophet ﷺ was, how the wives of the Prophet ﷺ were. So if you understand that, and if you understand in general the Qur'an, the Sunnah, you will be better qualified to be a good companion. So it's religious knowledge, It's character, adab. And I must emphasize adab. It's not just simply I know, but there is an adab. So humility, tawadu, not being argumentative, male or female, right? Leaving al-jidal, so you're not arguing all the time. You don't have to be right all the time. Forgiveness and learning to forgive, learning to control your anger. All of these are part of the adab that you'll find in the Quran and the Sunnah. So if you absorb that, you'll be a better husband and you'll be a better wife. You'll know how to control your tongue. You have to control your temper. All of these things are essential. So if you learn them, you'll be a better, you'll have a better marriage, bi'idhnillah azza wa jal. And, you know, the flags that you're looking for, that you call the green flags, are how obedient are they to Allah azza wa jal? How do they talk about Allah? How do they talk about the Prophet alayhi salatu wasalam? When they imagine their future, what do they imagine? I want to accomplish this and this and this. Does it match yours or not? What do they want to, why do they want to have kids? What do they want to do with those kids? Does it match your own perspective or not? Is it pleasing to Allah or not? So if you find that they are fulfilling all of these prerequisites of who a pious person is, then those are the flags that you're looking for. And you'll know more of that when you know more. When you're educated, right? And a lot of us are not educated. Our education, Islamic education, is very superficial. You just know a little bit, a thin layer on the surface. That's it. But the real deep layer, we don't really know Islam. We don't know Muhammad alayhi salatu wasalam deep enough. We just do a little bit on the top. So if you know more, then you will understand more, right? How to live in a healthy way in a marriage, I think, you know, I've described some of it. But you have adab. And Allah Azza wa Jal says, خُذِ الْعَفْوَ وَأْمُرْ بِالْعُرْفِ وَأَعْرِضْ عَنِ الْجَاهِلِينَ. خُذِ الْعَفْوَ is beautiful. خُذِ الْعَفْوَ, take as much as people can give and don't ask for more. And that is a very beautiful thing. Take as much as people can give and don't ask for more. So imagine people are walking and they are tanks. Just like, you know, a tank of a car that carries fuel. So this person is walking and they are filled up to a 50%. Imagine you could see this. This person up to a 75%. This person up to a 10%. So they can only give you what they have. So this person who has 10%, you can only ask for 10%. Beyond that, what? They stop. I don't have the energy. I'm not full. I'm missing 90%. So if you know that a person is unable to give you beyond that, don't ask for more. Okay? So that's kind of mercy, but also wisdom in dealing with people. Like this person can't be generous. I'm talking in general, not about husband and wife. This person is difficult for them to be generous. They're strong in other areas, but they're not really generous with money. So I'm not going to expect them to be generous. That's who they are. Unless you want to fix them, that's something else. But what to expect from people, right? This person gets angry very quickly. I know, that's their limit. Then I understand how to deal with them. Right? I'm not going to push them. This person, for instance, can't listen to a complicated story. I'm not going to tell them complicated stories. That's hard. So don't put on them what they can't carry. Allah doesn't put on you what you cannot carry. So don't expect from people what they can't carry. That's khuluq. That's an adab in Islam, by the way. Khudh al-afwa. Right? So don't burden a person. And what I'm going to describe next is difficult to apply it as the Prophet ﷺ applied it, but you can what? Let it inspire you. Don't let it be about yourself and your needs all the time. Me, me, me. Right? But also let it be about the other person. And the Prophet ﷺ, he said he would never personally avenge himself. Like, avenge himself for a personal injury or insult. I'm going to say that's impossible to do today. Like, he gets insulted for a personal reason, not Islamic reason. Personal reason, he doesn't avenge himself. He doesn't reply. He doesn't attack. Even if he wanted something, alayhi salatu wasalam, right? So Anas, again, this is one of the things that prove to you that he's a prophet of Allah Azza wa Jal. He says, خَدَمْتُ رَسُولَ اللَّهِ عَشْرَ سِنِينَ. He says, I served the Prophet, sallallahu alayhi wasalam, for 10 years. He never told me if I did something wrong, why did you do it that way? He never corrected me, meaning in household things, right? Like, let's say, for instance, he put it here instead of there, a vase here instead of there, made the bed this way but not in that way. He didn't say, why did you do it this way? 10 years. He never asked. He never complained. Whatever you do. And if the family of the Prophet والسلام, were to complain about him, he says, دعوه فلو كان فلو قدر لكان. He says, let him be. If Allah had wanted it to be this way, it would have happened. Let him be. See how detached he is from his own ego? Let it be. Let it be. He would come to his wife. Again, who can do this? Passes by the wife, but they don't have money. They're not wealthy. Passes by the one household. What do you have for lunch today? He says, we have nothing. He says, okay, I'll fast. I'll fast. That's how it is. If it's there, he eats it. If not, he'll fast. If they give a gift, because he didn't have anything, if they give a gift and it's there, right, some food, he'll eat it. If not, he'll fast. So again, there is no ego. So we want to understand how, right? This is how the Prophet ﷺ can inspire you. And that's why I'm saying, when you want to really learn, it has to be more than listening to lectures. Listening to lectures is great, but the lecturer will be unable, especially that lecture is kind of superficial and, you know, just for the general masses, it doesn't educate, will be unable to feed you all the things that you have. You have to read. You have to read, right? And especially the primary texts, the Quran and the Sunnah. Right? Okay. Okay. Yeah, inshallah. Zakallah. Let me see. Okay, let me see. I don't know if I answered these before or not. If we've seen the worst of our other half and it affects how we treat them, we become less respectful. What habit is helpful? Write her his goodness to appreciate him, her, be grateful. Think about all the other good things that they have. I don't know what the worst half that they have, what bad habits that they have. But you also kind of balance it with thinking about the other good things that they have. So appreciate the good, okay, and don't exaggerate the bad, and work on the bad with them so that they could be healed, they could get rid of it. So it's a balanced approach. This is when you're already married. So there's something bad about them, and everybody has bad things. So don't exaggerate the worst about them. Put it in perspective, in context. Think about the other good things and think about the potential also. They have these things that are good about them, and maybe this way, inshallah, we'll be able to overcome them together. So have that conversation with them. How can you know what is a test versus what is our nasib? There's no difference between them. Your nasib is a decreed thing, and it could be a test. So there's no difference between them. I'm not really sure how you distinguish between nasib and test, meaning nasib is something to be satisfied with and done versus a test that you need to struggle with. Maybe that's what you mean. But even if something is decreed, it doesn't mean if something is wrong with it that you don't try to fix it. So your nasib is not like surrender. Nasib, if you can fix something wrong, fix it. If you can improve something, fix it. If you can't, maybe, right, eventually you decide I have to live with this. And as long as it's not so displeasing to Allah Azza wa Jalla, you just simply live with that and you tolerate it, and that's your test, right? So I hope that I've captured the difference between them as you understand it. How do we protect our children from the unrealistic expectations of love, marriage, and besides discourage them from watching movies? Do open discussions. We do weekly, daily tazkiyah with family. Yeah. You do everything that you can. I mean, stop the poison. Stop those movies. Stop those series. Stop this music. Stop feeding them all of these wrong fantasies. And actually, as you said, talk to them openly about it. And have this daily, weekly tazkiyah and bring them to the masjid. And if the masjid where you live is not doing this job or not fulfilling that particular part, then at home, because you're responsible for your own children, so you feed them what you want them to have, how you want them to grow, how you want them to think, so you feed them all of that, and then you would have done your job. So it's not enough for you to earn money and feed them physically. The spiritual feeding, the spiritual growth is much more important. So yes, okay, do tazkiyah at home. So if you were in a haram relationship and you try to make it halal, it won't work. I didn't say that. If you're in a haram relationship, you quit immediately, you repent from it, and if the other person repents, you can get married. But is predicated on repentance. That's the condition. You repent and they repent, you stay away from each other until you are secure in your and their repentance, and then you can get married, and it can work. Okay? Does it or is it worth it to get married against experienced Muslim parents who know better? I heard men don't need parents' permission. It's not about this. It depends on who your parents are, how wise they are, and why they may be rejecting or accepting of a person. So your parents sometimes are wiser and they know better. And sometimes they're human beings, right? And they don't know better. And they have their own bias. If you're confused about that, you consult someone around you. Or you go to your local imam and you say, this is my condition, my situation, tell me who's right and who's wrong. Okay? Because that's the easiest way, inshallah, to do it. How about a parent's love for a child? You mean, is it tormenting as well? That is intense until, example, the mother is so heartbroken with her son becomes of certain things. Because of certain things, don't her son until she falls sick. I mean, yeah, the love of children is intense and can become so intense that it could make you sick. I don't necessarily say that that is a type of dominant love that Allah Azza wa Jal hates. It could be a type of love that you just simply love them a lot, that their loss cannot be tolerated, and it can make you sick or it can kill you. It's not necessarily competing with Allah's love. But it can. But it can. How? So you find them doing something that they like that displeases Allah, and you let them. You know, poor them, they're still young. They're, you know, he's in his 30s and he's still young, right? So when you do this, it means that you favor their approval to Allah's approval. That is a what? An imbalance. I'm not saying that's disbelief, that's kufr, but that's an imbalance. And you've gone beyond the acceptable limits of love. No, Allah Azza wa Jal should come first, also for their own benefit. You want them to be the best that they can, right? So if you rein them with Allah's love, with what Allah loves, they'll be the best. If you let them loose, run loose, do whatever you want, you are ruining them. And you're not going to be, and think about this, you're not going to be better to them than Allah. Allah is the one who made them. You didn't make them. Allah made them, and He wants them to live this way. And you think you're going to be better to them than Allah is? No. You should be an agent of whatever Allah Azza wa Jalla loves, right? Okay. Any book series recommendation to learn more about the Prophet's wives, the righteous women of the past? I can't think of any at this moment. There's one book, and I know it probably is translated, Women Around the Prophet. Women Around the Prophet, but if anyone is aware of any book, inshallah, let me know. But Women Around the Prophet, Sahabiyat Hawla Rasul, that's a book in Arabic and maybe in English. The biographies, if there's any biography of the daughters of the Prophet, alayhi salatu wasalam, or anything about Aisha, radiallahu anha, Maryam, radiallahu anha, the mother of Isa, alayhi salam, all of those, inshallah. But if I think of any, inshallah, I will let you know. I'll try to have a couple of recommendations, inshallah. I think I've answered all the questions here. Let me see this one. So we're done online, I think. I've been trying to get married, but nothing is working. I'm starting to get frustrated and lose hope, even though I know I shouldn't. What can I do different? So, and that's your condition, your situation here is a common one. You want to get married, but it's not working, and you're starting to lose hope. What should I do differently? So let's say on the religious side and then on the practical human side. On the religious side, increase your devotion to Allah Azza wa Jal, because you simply want something from Allah, right? And if you want something from Allah, what do? It's dua. And the better you are as a Muslim, the more likely that your dua will be accepted. So find out the times when dua will be accepted and do a lot of dua then, daily, right? Because you want something really important from Allah Azza wa Jal. So you can't say, I'm going to make dua for a week and then stop. So dua between adhan and iqamah, dua at the last third of the night, dua in your sujood, dua at the last hour on Friday between asr and maghrib, right? These are the times when dua is accepted. So you sit and you make a lot of dua, and you pray and you make a lot of dua. So the more righteous you are, the more likely that Allah Azza wa Jal will grant you all of this. So don't lose hope, even if it takes time. And understand that Allah Azza wa Jal will give you what is good for you at the right time. So don't lose hope. Keep making that dua. And you're not losing anything when you're making dua. Each dua that you make is a good deed. And it brings you closer, inshallah, to your objective. So trust Him subhanahu wa ta'ala. On the practical human side, maybe the way that you were pursuing it, maybe it was not working. So try to kind of to expand your search, have a network of people who will be able to be helpful. I don't know what you've tried so far. Ask this person, that person, ask for advice, ask for insights, expand your search. And don't be so shy, so reluctant and hesitant. Ask. And the more that you ask advice for assistance, it doesn't demean you when you're pursuing halal. And Allah Azza wa Jal, you know, had promised on the tongue of the Prophet alayhi salatu wasalam that someone who is pursuing halal, that Allah will assist them. So just simply ask. Don't sit back and wait. Ask, and inshallah you'll find that the more people know about this, the more likely that you will get insights into possible mates, bi'idhnillah azza wa jal, right? There, okay, so I'll try to answer just a little few more and we're done, inshallah. Should a wife tolerate a husband who sleeps after Salatul Fajr and does not work? If he's not working and he's not spending on the household, like, is that what you mean? Like, he's not working at all? Then obviously you don't have to tolerate that, because one of his main responsibilities, if not the main responsibility, is to earn a living, to be able to sustain and provide for the family. If he's not working at all, so you don't have to tolerate that. If you mean something else, inshallah, let me know. Maybe I'll be able to answer it next week, inshallah. But just simply sleeping after Fajr, that's not a sin, right? It's not healthy to try to change our spouse, right? We'll become frustrated if it doesn't work, but we can just create the environment that helps them change, right? I mean, you could try to change them. I don't see, I mean, yes, it's frustrating, but it doesn't always have to be frustrating. And you will get to know your spouse and you'll know what works for them and what doesn't, how to change them. Sometimes it's good to be oblique, like indirect. So indirect advice, indirect inspiration, indirect lectures, indirect, these are the things that work. It's not always helpful to listen to you telling them do A, B, C. But if it comes from somebody else, it'd be more helpful. So it could be indirect, right? But no, it doesn't mean that just create the environment and sit back. No, not if it's something that they really need. So it depends on the gravity of the change and how needed it is. So sometimes you have to be upfront about it. No, this can't continue. This is haram. And sometimes you just simply inspire. You do the right thing and hope that that thing will rub on them. So it depends, right, on what that thing is and your relationship with them and who that person is. But no, you should change if it's possible to change. What is an ingredient that helps alleviate a marriage which we would be surprised to know about? Like elevate a marriage which we would be surprised to know about? I don't know if it will surprise you. I know nothing that would surprise you. But the things maybe that we talked about. And maybe the thing, and I don't think that's a surprise, but that maybe is something that relates to that last question, is that the best way to change a person is to change yourself. The best thing, the best way to change a person is not to simply say, everything that is wrong in this marriage is you, so you have to change. If you want them to change, and you be better, and you be closer to Allah Azza wa Jal, and you make the dua that you know is needed, and that will bring on their change. So maybe that is something that may not surprise you, but it's highly influential. So be the change, you know, like be the change that you want to see, kind of thing. So you want them to be a certain way, you change and be that thing, and be better than that thing, and they will match it, bi-idhnillah Azza wa Jal, because you have Allah Azza wa Jal also on your side. So let me stop here, inshallah. If there's anything more, please do actually send it my way, and I'll try to answer it, inshallah, next week. We conclude by saying, Subhanakallahumma bihamdik, ashadu an la ilaha illa ant, astaghfiruka wa atubu ilayk. Alhamdulillah, rabbil alameen. Assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.